Welcome, one and all, with your host, Rolando, and his co-host, John. We are the Skeleton Boys.
Hello and welcome to the Skeleton Boys, a horror movie podcast. I'm Rolando.
And so am I. I'm Johnny, and so is he. We're Rolando and Johnny.
We are. And welcome to the show. This week we will review The Black Phone. As always, John will give us the plot in five words. We'll give our first thought, and then we go to deep spoiler analysis. But first, we go to one of TV. We go back to TV Corner, and we watch from one of the pre-ultimum episodes, episode 9, titled Into the Woods.
Yeah. Into the Woods.
Not a musical.
How the songs go. I'm just pretending.
Yeah. We're going, we into the woods. That's how it goes, I think. Right?
I'll read the synopsis for you. It's a Boyd and Sarah journey to the center of the earth and meet The Rock and Brendan Fraser. Damn, I don't remember this at all. Sounds good.
Nice.
Yeah, this was a fun one.
Yeah.
Shit's really starting to hit the fan.
Yeah, we're definitely nearing the end.
I just feel like it's such a dramatic flip on... I know you said the show wasn't doing this, but I think this is like its own sort of lost spin where they're pretending they're not character-centric episodes, but they kind of really are. Like, this one was like mostly about Donna.
Yeah, that's true.
Donna and her breaking down because what's-his-face decided to kill himself. Minor character that you meet briefly before he kills himself.
Yeah, that was... I was like, why is Donna acting very upset about everything? And it's because I guess she doesn't want to give people false hope, right? Is that the idea?
I took it more of like... she felt like she could have helped this kid that apparently everybody was friends with. I gotta say, I hate when shows do this. Either that or like we clearly miss this character who's just been there. He's like supposed to be a pivotal role. We ignore his character ever existed. I feel like they did that last episode too, right? They killed some random person. Oh no, the one where that dude let in that ghost girlfriend.
Oh, yeah, after introducing him in the previous episode, like at the last.
Yeah, I was like, who the fuck's this?
Right, yeah.
And this is the same with this guy, yeah. Like, the only thing I remember about him is him walking in and Donna's like, hey, why the long face? And he's just like, oh, it's just genetic. I just look like this. And then he kills himself. So.
Yeah.
I was like, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I feel like that's why she just, like, kind of really lost it because, what were they called? Hippie people? Prairie house people?
Colony house.
I don't know why I'm fucking... Colony house. Colony house people,
Colony who's? I don't know.
we're supposed to be her responsibility and she keeps losing grip on taking care of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm. Yeah,
because she's like, you guys need firewood? I'm going to put a hole right here in the middle of this one set because we don't want to build a whole extra set just for me to put another hole into. So that's what I figured happened. They're like, we could build a whole extra set just for you to put a hole into. Or, hear me out. It all takes place in the kitchen of this mansion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm okay with, I mean, I don't know. I again, like, that's one of the many things that, like, I don't get why they separated, right? There's been no actual, so I don't really have much investment or stakes in, like, or see Donna's, like, viewpoint there. Her, I don't want to say life point, but her, like, why she's choosing to live the way she's choosing, or why it was such a big deal to be separated, right? Like, two groups of
yeah.
people.
I'm guessing this episode is going to be what shows us.
That's the last episode. This is it.
Yeah. Because we still don't know why. Now we can kind of understand why, what's Boyd's son's name? Left to the colony house?
Right.
Because even though, I got to say, like, these kids are so shitty. Like, why don't you understand? I mean, even I could see, like, oh, fuck, Mama's going to shoot me. Thanks, Dad. I'm real sad about Mom dying, but, you know.
Well, you know, you're right. I was there in the previously on episode, they show the scene again where Boyd shoots the mother. And every time I see it, I'm like, Boyd could have shot her in the knee. Isn't he, like, weapon trained? He could have disarmed her a different way than popping. He shot twice, so he clearly shot her twice in the head. You know they're dead. You ever heard of that?
I will forgive that only because she's supposed to be a badass ex-Marine.
Okay.
So you don't know at what point, like, you shoot her in the knee and she probably instinctively shoots him and then shoots her kid. And
I think if anybody gets shots in the knee, they're going to be taken off their aim at least, right? She's not that good.
Maybe. Rob. I don't know. Well, no, Marines are trained pretty rough.
Right.
Not a lot of them make it out. I did, though. On Call of Duty, Modern Warfare. I passed all the tests.
Yeah, so, I mean, that scene again just hits a little different when there could have been an out. And I think you're absolutely right. I think the son is like, oh, well, to be fair, the son also was trying to warn him, like, hey, Mom's not doing good. And he was just so interested yeah. in rebuilding the town that he could resent his dad a little bit and just be like, you know, what is it? I don't want to live with him right now because he didn't, you know, listen to my warnings and stuff. Which actually kind of correlates because that is also when he shot his wife is when he found the stones. And, you know, and that could have been when he decided to go to Colony House at that moment. Soon after they decided to split. So.
Yeah, that's true. I guess, yeah, it's just. I feel bad for Boyd because I don't think he's ever made a wrong decision. I don't think he's like, and I'm not saying he's making right decisions, but I don't think he's ever made a wrong decision.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I thought he was too trusting of Sarah, but now in this episode, I feel like he is, it's kind of paying off because clearly she does have a connection to, what, like another, whoever's talking to her or speaking through her or some sort of
yes.
possession. So
whatever that is, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think what's lining up is that the monsters are going to be the red herring and there's something else going on between two things that are like good and bad. Because I feel like there's two things battling. Right. And
you're right.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of like Lost. Did you ever see Lost? Do you remember the premise of like the island?
Yeah. Where the plane gets split in half. Right.
Yeah.
And then one group's on one side and one group's on the other. They think they're in purgatory at one point.
It's like.
But then they make it back home and then it's psych.
So Alice and Janney has two kids on this magical island. And I believe it's Alice and Janney. She has two kids on this magical island. And she names one Jacob. And the other one is, they don't give his name. He's just referred to as the Man in Black. And they are locked in a battle between good and evil. Jacob's good. Man in Black is evil, right? And Jacob has to like keep the Man in Black there trapped. Because he was possessed by some darker entity. And I feel like that's where we're going. That's the feeling or sense I got. Like there's this like duality of between good and evil there. So there's good spirits and bad spirits. kind of plainly put it, because we don't know exactly what they are. And I feel like that's where we're headed, right? Because I feel like some people, because in this episode, Sarah, some, it was seemed like it was Boyd's wife who was talking to him at that, talking to him through Sarah.
Oh, okay.
Did you get that?
I see. Yeah, I didn't really catch that, but yeah, that makes sense.
Because of the pet name that...
Interesting.
The pet name that he had for him, what was it, Fisherman, or... I forgot the... They said it last week.
I don't
week.
Remember.
Neither do I. But...
Yeah.
The thing Sarah was saying at the end, when she was possessed, after she awoke from her spasm or whatever, was that she said something along those lines, like, oh, Boyd, you were wrong. I was wrong, or whatever. It's really something else going on. And that's clearly her. That means that she died and is still there somehow, trapped there. So, I don't know.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Boyd, you were wrong, or she was wrong?
I think the mother said she was wrong, because remember she was shooting people saying like, oh no, we're all dead, or there's no way you could be alive, and then she kind of lost her mind.
Yeah, so Sarah right now is kind of acting like a conduit between whatever they are and the living world. She's kind of like a... almost like a telephone.
Yeah.
Like a white telephone. As opposed to a black one. And she's relaying these messages.
It all ties together.
It all ties together. So From is actually what you got to watch before you watch The Black Phone, so you fully understand what's going on.
It's canon. From is canon. The Black Phone universe.
yeah I'm curious. I'm starting to get real because what happened in this episode that made me think, wow, this is really making me get like Stranger Things vibes. Like I feel like there's an underground science bunker. They're all being monitored.
Well, Tabitha definitely hit something.
Right. Yes. End. That's. I think that's what. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if that's what it is, and they're like, they release and kind of test these things.
Mm-hmm.
But then why would they do it for so long too? Unless it's aliens, I don't know.
Well, that goes back to the idea that that the people who are monsters are either in some sort of like 70s clothing or like old Victorian clothing, because the first old lady was like, she was in like a, geez, she was dressed like a old,
she kind of looked like she was going to a funeral.
Oh, a funeral. Yeah, she looked like she was dressed like she was going to a funeral, but like her, it also looked from like the 1600s or something, you know what I mean? It didn't look like anything modern, and nobody really, none of these monsters or whatever are in modern clothing. They're all either in late period clothing. Even some of the hallucinations.
So the girl that the ghost girl the dude let in didn't look like she was that old, but I guess you could argue that's like 70s, 60s style clothing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of tough because it looked kind of 90s too.
Well, I want to say that she looked... her clothing looks similar to Victor when he was a kid. You know how Victor's like stuck in this, like when we saw him as a boy, he had a more modern time than what it was as it is now, but it would still look like the past. So I would say like the 70s, right? That's, I think 70s, 80s.
Oh, okay. And then there's also that kid that I don't know why this never got addressed again. Maybe we're not supposed to think anything of it, but, the first time the family encounters the whatever they are, one of them stops the girl. I forgot her name already. I'm really fucking bad with names when it comes to characters. That's why, like, shows like The Umbrella Academy are perfect for me, because I'm like, oh yeah, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I grew up on Slipknot, you know? Just gave me 8 characters and 1 0, so 9 in total, and that's all I need. She's walking up to the colony house, right? They're all getting rushed in, and then somebody stops and says her name, and she turns and looks, and then it seemed like she recognized this, like, dead person, but I don't know.
Well, that could have been read two ways. Like, either she recognized them, or that thing was manipulating them. And I think, now thinking about it, it seems like those creatures have an ability to manipulate them, because that's what happened to that one guy who let him into the colony house, right? He was manipulated into opening the windows,
right,
similarly as the old woman who the kid manipulated the older kid to open the window as well. So it may be a form of...
I think what I'm trying to get at is maybe, like, similar to that, maybe we're seeing all these people that seem like they're only from, like, this one time era or before. But I think the show's actually just trying to push, like, this is how old things are.
How old things are there at that?
No, this is how long, like, these ghouls or, like, whatever they're supposed to be have been around.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I agree. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they're, like, going to Goodwill and buying vintage clothing or anything.
They could be going to Spirit of Halloween, though.
Spirit of Halloween?
There's the Milkman costume. That guy keeps popping up, which is kind of funny, because I can't imagine, like, younger people today going, like, who is this guy? Why is he dressed like that? Like, you know, well, back in the day, even before us, they used to deliver milk.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
I think they stopped doing it in the early 70s, I think.
Well, they're like, oh, you mean like Instacart? No, it's not quite right either.
No, not quite as beautiful.
Right.
As hiring people to do stuff for you, which you would never normally do. But now that it's through an app, it's okay. Like, all of these things, like, because I started doing all this shit too. Like, yeah, fuck yeah, this is amazing. It's so accessible. And then it occurred to me, I'm like, wait a second. If this wasn't through an app, I'd be like, no, sir. I am not allowing anybody in my home. I'm not allowing anybody to see what I shop for. But through an app, everything's so, like, well, okay, sure.
Yeah, it's so...
Go ahead and know all my deviant behavior, Amazon. It's okay.
Oh, they know. They know. They're like, what's a good comparison? Like, Instacart, but don't they just go and get you things? It's like, yeah, but they only get you one thing. They only get you one thing. Yeah. Every
they
month.
You milk.
Every week or whatever.
You know, fresh milk straight from the cow. Oh, is it pasteurized so you don't get any of those icky stomach bugs? No.
No.
No, it's not. It's fresh milk.
You're telling me the milk at the grocery store isn't fresh? So.
Yeah. Milk guaranteed to make you shit regardless of your lactose intolerant status.
Well,
that's a review of From.
Who are these milk people?
So now when you see the milkman, who's the guy all in white, he's there to make you shit, is what we're trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah. Good episode, though. Yeah. If you want to wrap it up.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Before we just completely gloss over it, the final
60
seconds are Boyd and Sarah have reached the very edge of where nobody has gone past before. You see a bunch of bottles that are kind of like a wind chime style.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
They have something in them, and Boyd is trying to get it. But then he can't, right? Or something like that. So they decide to set up camp. Well, Sarah's like, no, we shouldn't do this. Oh, what's up?
No, I was going to say, he says, like, I think I see something in him. So he tries to poke at it with his stick, his walking stick. And he chimes them. And that sets off Sarah. And she ends up having, like, a seizure or something. And then she awakes. I guess Boyd had to set up camp himself and then like stuck her in the tent, carried her into the tent and changed her into a night outfit or something. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, and then we also find out why she's being so cooperative now. It's because the whole point of what she was doing was to make sure her brother stayed alive, and she fucking slit his throat. So oh, yeah. Now I think she's just kind of like cruising, like, well, whatever, and like, I don't care.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they're in the tent, and she's mm-hmm. like, we shouldn't be here, we shouldn't be here. And then all of a sudden, there's very like close encounters of the third kind sort of scenario where there's like a light shining through the tent. Of course, they're not going to open it. And then something's like fucking rattling them.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like some sort of fraternity. Maybe it's like a ghost fraternity and just hazing all these people all the time. or it's those kids from Sometimes They Come Back, right? Except they're not as evil. They're just like there to like shake party. People's tents.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just want to party. Like, come on, get out here, let's party.
First I thought that the way it looked, the tent when it was moving looked like it was being pulled back, and then they cut away and they do something else. But when they cut back to them, they're like, it looks like they're like rolling or something. There's like or like swaying up back and forth, almost like they're in a boat or I don't know.
The camera cuts were kind of weird. I thought the same thing, but then I was like, I don't know what direction I'm looking at anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right.
Because they kept doing like a spinny thing with the camera itself. And I was like, this is like Marvel movie fighting style editing right here.
I couldn't get a sense of what exactly was happening to them. And only for them to, I guess, being stopped and then like a giant white light. Oh, there's also, we heard this horn now, right? This Viking-ish horn sound,
yes.
Right? So they heard that towards the end of the episode as well.
It sounds like, what do you call it? I don't think we've ever had to hear one of these horns. I think I've heard one once in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so far in the distant. The emergency horns, the old school, like,
Like air raid horns.
Yeah. Or like, yeah, tornado or hurricane. Right. The emergency
right,
horns.
Right. I've seen them. I can
only recall hearing one in my lifetime.
Oh.
And it was hurricane... I'm going to get this wrong. Not Katrina, the one before that one. The bad one. I don't think we're around for the bad one, but there was like a bad one in between.
There was.
Yeah, I remember driving around and there was just trees all over the fucking place.
They're alphabetical, so. Because if it's K, then.
What I'm saying. I don't remember. This had to have been like 90 something. And the only other horrible hurricane we had in our area of Texas was back in the 70s, I think.
Mm-hmm. Previously. I remember the 90s one. It was, what the fuck was that one called?
Yeah, I remember fucking tripping. And mm-hmm. folks at home, I grew up in a fucking, well, for the most part of my life, I grew up in a trailer home. That thing just refuses to die. I promise. It's like conveniently built up on like a little hill. So when it floods, the water never reaches my house or my old house. It is like deteriorating, but decided to keep itself together with like hopes and dreams. Yeah. Interesting. Like I remember my father driving around. He like threw me in the car and we drove around. It was just like knocked over trees everywhere.
That is
our review of the episode 9, Into the Woods.
Well, there was Alan, Rita, Ike, Harvey. Oh man, they don't have one in the 90s. This is not a very thorough.
It had to have been the 90s, right?
Brett?
Right.
Aaron, no. Deadly Storms.
Mm.
I guess whatever hit us then wasn't very deadly because it isn't listed as a deadly storm.
Yeah, I don't think it was. Oh, yeah, because I feel like we're more famous for depression, right? I mean, tropical depressions is what I meant to say.
Yeah, well, we get a lot of hurricanes. Some of them are, they like fade out in the Gulf, right? And then they hit us, but not like full impact. Like we're not drenched in, like, you know how like Katrina, it just like sat under Louisiana and part of Texas, it just drowned that whole city. Yeah. I don't think that quite happened to us in our lifetime. I think not that I can recall, but we've had some bad storms,
like pretty bad storms. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're right. They kind of just like we're either getting like the outskirt of it, or it doesn't linger very long. It just kind of passes through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because even hurricanes are like, oh, damn, this place sucks, and then just like take off up north.
It's like, oh,
I don't want to die here. Just try their best to get to like San Antonio or Austin before they just deteriorate. Like, this is where I want to die.
Like anybody grew up in South Texas? No, this place sucks. I want to get out of here. Let me go north. So
yeah, exactly.
I'd rather die than stay here.
Yeah, and hurricanes are very like. They lean one way on the political spectrum, so they're like, I'm definitely not going to go west.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
Those aren't hurricanes. Those are marijuana clouds.
Yeah.
Yes, sir, they are. They most certainly are.
Cool.
Yeah.
We should...
All right.
Kumar, hurricane... Cat 5 podcast. Okay.
I would regret not mentioning what a terrible day we experienced yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, U.S. government thinks it was more beneficial and important to overturn Roe versus Wade after, like, what, half a fucking century or something like that.
Yep. Well, let's be clear.
I don't know what's going on in the U.S. anymore.
Let's be clear. Only five people thought that. Only five people thought... that all of America should be ran this way. Only five people voted that way. So clearly the most powerful, most important people decided all our lives and what our choices are. Yeah, I was really sad yesterday, by the way. I was really sad. Yeah. I could not do anything.
Yeah, it was fucking depressing.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't either. What a shit show. But it's okay because we have at least one black person on the board who they have brainwashed into being an even bigger piece of shit.
Somehow he thinks he's white. Okay, Clarence Thomas.
But okay. Thank God Kavanaugh is still on the fucking board because, oh man, he really needed this. He needed this win because he was like, ooh, I keep raping people. I don't want all my babies to die.
Yeah, he probably popped a cold one, drinking some beers. That's what he does. Yeah. Fucking. Not enough can be said about it. Donate to Planned Parenthood any amount you can. That's what I say. Donate to Planned Parenthood. Whatever amount you need.
Yeah.
Whatever you can spare. I'm sure they need it. So.
And speaking of the Rio Grande Valley again, that's like one place that really needs a Planned Parenthood.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Even though, again, because it's the Rio Grande Valley, people are just uneducated.
Mm-hmm.
So they assume it's only about abortion. It's just an abortion clinic. And it's like, mm-hmm. No, dude. It's an all around fucking free clinic. Like, ugh, yep. Dude. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Speaking to the choir here, you know? I know. I feel you.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, that's our review of episode 9 of Lost Into the Woods.
Lost Into the Woods. Is
it? Pretty crazy. Yeah. The U.S. government sucks there, too.
Yeah. Why won't they save these people? Fuck the U.S. government.
Oh, yeah. They don't want to save these people because they're all already alive and born.
Oh, that's so why. That's right. Why. Nobody's
they're
pregnant.
Like, they can fend for themselves.
Yeah.
Like, oh, we need help getting out of here. And they're like, why don't you just pull yourself up from your bootstraps and get the hell out?
I'll say that. If there were any unborn babies there, they would send wave after wave after wave of poor, you know, military soldiers in with guns blazing.
Yeah, and then immediately put them in a camp because technically they're not in U.S. territory, so they're immigrants.
They're immigrants,
so they all get to live in a cage for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, America, gotta love it.
Yeah, America. I hope you agree. Our number one fan. what was his name? Freedom Fighter 420.
Yeah. Yeah. All righty. Let's go on to our main review. And I'm potentially much funner the topic, child abduction. Let's talk about The Black Phone. John, do you want to give us the plot in 5 words?
Johnny.
5 words.
Plot summary.
Rolando, drum roll, please.
For Johnny's 5-word plot summary for The Black Phone, coming in at number 3, town only carries black balloons.
Yeah. It's true. Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, no, I saw black balloons in my dream. Oh, that could be anybody. We're the town that only has the black balloons. That's our thing. No, I'm just kidding. That doesn't actually happen in the film.
No, but it does.
Coming in at...
real quick, my fiance pointed something out to me, and it broke my brain real quick. She said, like, didn't her very smart little sister say it's black balloons? And right when the grabber is you know, trying to get him, he looks in the van. He's like, oh, black balloons. And didn't think anything of it. Like,
oh, okay. So when I saw it, what I took away was like the kid was a little bit panicked, like didn't want to talk to this guy. And then turned and looked. And then I think it was more like, oh, fuck, it's black balloons.
And then he got grabbed.
And then got knocked. Yeah. I think the kid was smart enough to be like, oh, shit. And then it was too late.
It was too late. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. All right.
But also because this town only carries black balloons. That's why they can't catch
Yeah.
Coming in at number 2 for The Black Phone. Boy has Mexican spirit guide.
Oh, yeah.
Which I was half like, fuck yeah, and half like, how come he couldn't have been the main kid?
Yeah, you're right about that. I'm just glad that there was some, I know this sounds very, like, liberal, but I'm really happy there was some representation going around. There was a really well, like, fleshed out character, like the Robin, the Mexican kid, and then you had also...
Ariano,
and then you also had the other kid, the first kid, Benedict. Was it Benedict or Ben or something
like that? Yeah,
he was also, and it wasn't even made like a big deal about it. He's just an Asian kid and a Mexican kid. It was great. I loved it. It was wonderful.
And I like there was like this like fucking beautiful camaraderie like amongst the kids.
Except for
that one bully kid, I guess. But yeah, he was very like, oh, your arm is mint. I'm like, yeah. Nobody says that anymore.
Nobody says that anymore, yeah.
but yeah, I thought that was really nice of him. That made me smile. Like this, I'm not even done with my thingies, but like this movie really gave me a certain vibe that I really appreciated.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, I'm glad Robin was in it. I kind of wish he was the main kid. But I thought he was badass, and he was wearing a fucking Cheech and Chong shirt, and I was like, hell yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because that's basically the only representation we had during that time.
Some say that's it. It's all we've had in the last 30 years.
Okay, so for the number one spot for Black Phone, it's not necessarily a plot summary, but perhaps a new name for the Skeleton Boys.
All right.
Ethan Hawke's Super Naughty Boys.
Oh, that's actually really good. Yeah. Trademark. We trademarked it.
Because it reminded me of, I was trying to spin in a Psycho Gorman reference somehow, but I was like, it's too many words. I was like, Ethan Hawke doesn't like hunky boys. He likes naughty
boys. Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Okay, cool. Excellent plot summaries, John. And do you want to give us your first thoughts on The Black Phone? So wait, so do you think this is the best movie ever made or just the greatest movie ever made?
Ooh, it's going to be the greatest movie ever made.
Okay.
Not the best yet. Even though it is hitting all my favorite notes, it's like very Linklater. And I don't know if it's like marrying two things I wish existed, which is Dazed and Confused and Ethan Hawke being in Dazed and Confused.
Wait, Ethan Hawke was not in Dazed and Confused, was he?
No, that's what I'm saying. Like, I wish he was, because it's still gotcha, a Linklater connection.
Yeah, you're right.
But Linklater refused to put Ethan Hawke in it. No. I think I recall Ethan Hawke was already doing the big movies like... not Poetic Justice. What am I thinking of? Dead Poet Society and shit like
that. There you go. I was like, is it Janet Jackson movie?
Yeah, I was like, why were you thinking of that movie?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought it was really good. I also appreciated there's not a whole lot of, like, filler story.
Mm-hmm.
You know? They kind of just tell you what you need to know. Through like a lip, not exposition, that's not the right word for it, right? I guess exposition a little bit, but like oh, the mom is Native American and has like can talk to spirits and stuff type of deal, right? But they don't go into like don't full dive into that, which I was a little worried they were gonna do. I was like, I don't need to know that much about it.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, if the cops can accept that this kid can see things very quickly.
Right, yeah.
Because it's the 70s and they're like, oh shit, you know,
yeah.
Lorraine and what's his name, Warren. Ed Warren? You know.
Yeah.
Got Amityville Horror. The Exorcist is going to come out soon. No, I was kidding.
No, you're right. That was a very in vogue thing. Psychics, right? That were able to find missing children. Because there was, I guess, in the late 70s, 80s, there was a focus and a rash of a lot of kidnappings. So there was a huge effort to push to try to get like kids, you know, more aware of putting their faces out there. That's where we get like the kids on the milk carton, missing posters and stuff like that. I'll say I loved this movie, obviously, and I think that one of the best things they did was they established all these characters and they gave them real weight and stakes and things. Like, I wanted these characters to prevail in the end, and I felt like this is probably, and we'll talk about it in spoilers, I think this is probably one of the best endings to any movie, because I feel like I saw and got everything I wanted in an ending from the story. From
the satisfying, story they were telling. Right? In one word, like simply satisfying. That's exactly what I thought. As soon as I walked out the theater, I was like, this is fucking satisfying.
Yeah.
I am so happy.
And
I was super stoked.
And they
enough for me to like text you immediately, right?
You did, I was
like, dude. Yeah.
So I love that the world feels incredibly lived in. It's set in the 70s and it feels like the 70s, and these kids feel like real kids and they feel like they have a life and they have like all these things going on. You know what I mean? Like they have like, they feel like real people. They don't feel like characters. So, and again, like they raised a lot of important stakes for them to like, I wanted to see them, you know, achieve their goals in the story, and they did a fantastic job, and they just really spent the first half of that movie perfectly. So when, I don't think this is a spoiler because I think it's in the trailer, right? That when Finn is abducted and he's taken with the grabbers, it's kind of like we see previously a buildup that there was other kids, including like his best friend and some other neighborhood kids who were taken, and it's like, oh, well, you think like only the worst, right? Like these kids, he's gonna die, right? Like that he's gonna be abducted, he's gonna die, or worse, right? And
or worse, yeah.
They do.
I was waiting for like a Lovely Bones thing to happen also, and I'm glad it didn't, but
and I do have nitpicks, just tiny little nitpicks here and there, but
Yeah. No, I agree. Yeah.
But overall, I was like deeply satisfied, and I like that everything this kid went through. It's basically, I like that it's a self-contained story about a kid who needs to grow in confidence and believe in himself, and he needs to prevail over this thing. It just so happens that it's about him being abducted, right? And it's about him, you know what I mean, persevering over these fears that he has, which is incredibly relatable story considering the topic, right? The sort of child abduction story that's in it.
And also I
loved all the performances
after the fact, because I've had a couple of days to think about it, right? I saw it Thursday. I'll get to it in spoilers, but remind me to tell you the takeaway I took from it a couple of days later or a day later, where I was like,
okay,
well, because like kids running away from his problems basically is the idea, right?
Right.
But it's because he comes from a broken family.
Right.
And, you know, at the beginning, right, because you see this father is beating his child and his father's always drunk.
Mm-hmm.
They still take care of him, but he's like, because the little girl's having what, premonitions? Not premonitions, I guess more like,
no, premonitions is correct. Right?
But these things have already happened, right? They're not gonna happen. Is that the wrong word?
You're right. She's getting visions? No, not visions. Visions is the future.
Vision, sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Visions like the future, right? So what would be the past? Well, I don't know. I think people.
So she's getting post-initions. Post-emissions. Actually, post-emissions sounds like farting, but okay. So she's getting dream farts, essentially, about the previous kids that have died.
Yeah, yeah.
and then she tells somebody about this at school. The cops hear about this. The cops come into school, talk to her about it. Of course, she's feeling real uneasy about it.
Right, yeah.
One thing I appreciated was, like, they made the white cop be like, ah, come on, you gotta tell us. And then, you know, the black cop's like, oh, dude, chill the fuck out.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's a little girl. But then I like how the little girl's, like, snapping back at the white cop, like, oh, yeah, no, I fucking killed the kid. You're right, me. I thought that was really special and cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course, I did it.
Yeah, she's wonderful. She's excellent. The actress, Madeline McGraw, she's really good. I thought actually all the leads Madeline are really McGraw. Good. I did have... Okay, so I think all the kid actors are wonderful. I don't think there's one bad kid actor in this whole thing. That's just like Scott Derrickson, the director, whoever he found these kids, whatever he did, he chose absolutely the right kids to portray these parts. Everything felt natural. And I feel like Madeline McGraw's his sister, Gwen, she is given... what I would say a very showy, tough part, what I would consider for a kid, but I felt like she handled it incredibly well. She was, anytime she did anything in this movie, it's funny, it's engaging, it's, you know, it's completely like just, she could just see that she's like a star in this movie. And it's sort of like a star making turn for her. Cause she just absolutely is electric in this whole movie. And in a more understated part, Finn, the actor, Madison Thames?
Mason Thames?
Mason Thames.
Mason Thames?
Mason Thames,
Finny,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, he had a much understated, more reserved part, but I felt like he handled it incredibly well. He's pretty much, again, like at every shot of this movie, and I feel like he never didn't seem believable or overwhelmed in this part.
He was... consistent with his character's sort of rationalization. Because even at the beginning, apparently he's always in these like high tense sort of situations where he's about to get his ass kicked all the time. So he's always very calm, trying not to like freak out. Mm-hmm. And you get a lot of that when he's locked in the basement by Mr. Ethan Hawke. Mm-hmm. Oh, spoiler. I'm just like, you can't tell it's fucking Ethan Hawke at the beginning. He's just got to talk a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I was going to say, I wouldn't have hated, even though I'm not saying this is what I wanted, but I wouldn't have hated if you find out this is like a prequel to Sinister.
That's fake.
But, yeah.
The writer, one of the co-writers said that, well, he made also, he co-wrote Sinister with Scott Derrickson, right? And he said, like, they're going to finish their trilogy of places and homes that they're not supposed to go to, like, because it's the basement in this movie, and then the other one was the attic. Yeah. So they're going to do the garage next to finish their trilogy. That was pretty funny. But, yeah.
Oh, and a shout out to James Ransom, right? He's it was fun watching him. He plays Ethan Hawke's brother, the one that's like coked out trying to figure out where the killer's at.
Okay, what is he in? What is he, looks familiar?
Oh, he's from the Sinister movies. He's the cop that helps him.
Yeah. I don't recall him. Yeah, I didn't recognize him.
When you see him in the Sinister movies, you'll recognize him right away because he's got like these like really dark eyes. So like you see like that worried big eye look.
Yeah.
Really good. And then Miguel Cáceres Mora is the guy that plays Robin Arellano.
Amazing. Amazing, amazing turn.
Yeah, so what do you think? As far as the writing goes, who do you think's a better writer? Let's say just for screen. Joe Hill or his dad?
I want to say Joe Hill's batting a better average, right? Because he did...
Maximum Overdrive? I'm just kidding.
His adaptations so far have been pretty solid, right? Because didn't he co-write Dr. Sleep with Stephen King? And that movie was great.
I think... I think like Stephen just did did The Shining, right? And then Joe just kind of made the sequel.
I think Stephen King write that? I think he did. You know what another movie I'm thinking about?
He might have written it. Which one?
Horns. Joe Hill for sure wrote Horns. Did you ever see that with
Horns?
Yeah.
Yes. No, Daniel Radcliffe, right?
Daniel Radcliffe, yeah. No, adaptation's okay. It's okay.
I've seen it several times, yeah.
You don't remember.
No, I don't remember.
And I think the only performance that I didn't really like, and it's because he's like a hidden man. It depends on this guy's like what he's cast and what he's in, but I'm not always the biggest fan of Jeremy Davis. The father.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I thought
he was okay.
He's good. Like everything he's doing are choices, but sometimes I feel like they're a little much. They're too big. Like they're very, I don't know. They're very showy in a way, but not in a like shitty, not in a shitty way. But it's just like all his like when Jeremy Davis is in a movie, you know he's in a movie. Does that make sense? Like. He's not subtle. He's not. I mean, did you see this guy's fucking hair? Like, what? Which kind of choice is this fucking hair he had in this movie? Like, I don't know.
That's why for a second there, I honestly thought that we were watching Adam Brooks, and I was like, is this Adam Brooks? And why is he being so Adam Brooks-ish?
Yeah.
Which for folks at home, Adam Brooks was our new obsession after Psycho Gorman.
That's true. Yeah.
The editor.
And of course, not enough can be said about, you know, the best actor in the world, Ethan Hawke. We're truly in the Hawkeissance right now. The guy is just making some amazing career high performances at this point. Like all his choices. He's totally cast against type, I think. Playing the grabber, and I think he looks a little bigger and fatter. I'm pretty sure that was like a choice, right? So he looks more menacing, and against these you know, younger kids and stuff. So, and it was really, really watch him do this whole thing, to watch him be this character, right?
Yeah.
Or
I almost wish I knew more about who he was talking to, because it almost seemed like he was talking to people in his head. Right, I know, yeah. Part of it was like, but right, because it seemed like, I mean, he could have just been lying the entire time, but I don't think he was. I think he legit was hearing somebody talk, because then he also heard the phone ring as well, but he can never hear anybody on the other line.
I think there's a part of the story that you have to context clue a little bit, and he says that he used to be there. He used to be in there. So we can surmise that his dad did this to him, and this is a way he was probably abused, and his dad did this to him because he says he used to be in there. He was in there at one point too. So there might have been a black phone trying to communicate with him at some point as well. So he does mention those things. So you can kind of like context clue that, and that he probably was abused by, I'm assuming his dad, I'm assuming somebody close to him or whoever his parental figure was. And so now he's doing it to other kids, basically. Right.
Right. So, yeah. I also want to know about the kabuki style masks that he would wear, like the sad one. Like he would wear the sad one, anticipating the kids breaking the rules.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or like trying to escape, right?
Right, yeah.
I thought was kind of cool because you knew he wasn't going to hurt the kids when he had the happy one on.
He clearly, well, just based on the mask and my limited knowledge on those things, those are clearly his like ways. He clearly has like a weird identity complex, right? He's where he's like can't. These masks are expressing, or he's hiding under these masks because they express the emotions that he's trying to feel, right? So he has different masks. And when in this movie, he does lose it. And then he's like, my face or whatever, because he just like thinks they're a part of him, right? Oh, yeah. It's like a character or something that he's kind of, you know, his break from reality, his break from his psychic break from it. That's what he's closely identifies with. So
do you think he's a huge Twisty the Clown from American Horror Story fan?
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And I found it. I thought it was kind of cool. So I'm sure it's intentional. But what was his name in Sinister? What was the demon's name?
Oh yeah,
something with a K. I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that, because it was pure evil or didn't have any sort of emotion, there was no mouth. Mm. And I felt like these masks were all mouth. Like, it was all about, like, the mouth and not necessarily, like, any of the upper part.
Any of the other features? Yeah. They said, I want to say Tom Savini made them? Which makes sense, right? I want to say Tom Savini makes this mess. Fucking
perfect, yeah.
Yeah.
Tom Savini at 78 years old, who's still in better shape than I am.
Yes. Than most people say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I... cool. We've been running a little long here. Do you want to just go into spoilers now? Or do you have any last thoughts?
Yeah, no, spoilers.
Okay, cool. Let's go into spoilers.
Wait! No, stop, stop, stop talking, guys. Stop the podcast. Stop. Please stop the podcast. Because we're about to go into...
spoilers.
The kids save the day. It is basically Goonies, but with dead kids.
Okay, so to explain, the black phone is like this mystical thing where all of his past victims are able to communicate to the latest victim. In this case, it was Finn, right? And what was so amazing was the awe shared with him what they tried to do. But Finn, which I thought was just brilliantly thought out or written or whatever, was that everything he did, he used... Yeah, all the kids, all the information he got from the different kids, he used to set up his own trap and his own way to escape. And then he uses every single thing that was given to him. So I love that part of the movie. I was like, oh my God, everything was like, everything meant something. Everything was important. All these kids were like, it was all like, what do I say? Nothing was wasted, you know, for the sake of it. So,
I was just, one part that kind of confused me, but I also chalked it up to like, it just needs like another scare. Was, the bully kid that was giving me against,
Stranger Things,
talking about Stranger Things again, the second season, that Australian kid with the mustache.
Yeah.
It like reminded me of that kid, right?
Yeah. I thought the same thing.
And he's helping Finny out, but then he's still being pissed off about everything.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, when he's yelling, like, this isn't about you, or whatever. I just thought like maybe they can't get released from that place until this is resolved. I assumed. Right. But, then I didn't understand why he got pulled away. Like he just like shot out into the darkness. And then the two bottles that were there flew and shattered against the wall. Which also led me to my next question. Like, how come Finny didn't keep the shards of glass and stab him in the neck? But,
because I think my assumption is I don't think he would have been able to overpower him.
That's true.
Yeah. He, like, even if he had perfect glass, it still seemed like this guy was enough of a expert to know how to, you know, neutralize whoever his victims were. I guess that you can kind of make that assumption. Like he's incredibly dangerous in that way, right? That was my guess, right? And he's
still cutting him with the airplane.
He did cut him with the airplane. Yeah. What? And it seemed like this kid that you were speaking about as well, what was his name? I think it was Vance or something, right? Or hold on real quick. I think it's important. Yeah, his name was Vance. He was a very angry kid, right? He was a very like, because they show a scene where he's playing pinball at some like convenience store or something, and he's trying to beat his high score and somebody interrupts him and he completely goes psycho and he like beats up the kid and carves out like something like numbers and the kid's arm and shit, which ends up being the address, which was super weird. But I think that was just like a throwaway supernatural thing. But
yeah.
But you could tell that this kid was upset. And I think what he meant by this isn't for you, this is for us, he meant like, because they've all failed, so we're going to get it's going to be satisfying when the grabber is finally killed.
Oh, that's a fucking great point. Because you're right. They show that entire scene where he's just pissed that he didn't get his way or he didn't win.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. Oh, and to be fair, folks at home, I'm not condoning this kid's violent behavior. But the only reason he carved whatever into that kid's arm or whatever is because the other kid tried to stab him with that same knife.
True, that's true too.
Yeah.
He defended himself.
Like, oh, he's a shitty kid. And then the more I watch the scene unravel, I'm like, oh, man, he's kind of like, I mean, I wouldn't do that, but I understand. I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, no, I like that his thing was that apparently he also got it the worst, too, right? Because he tried to escape. He found a way to, like, get into the freezer.
Oh, yeah.
And so he, like, particularly, like, took it out on him. Which I thought was also helpful because he's the one that led him to the stakes, which helped him with the dog. So it's like everything like was meant to happen a certain way, right? Like Bruce telling him, you know, to swing as hard as he could, right? And then like Billy telling him to not go upstairs because they'll punish you. And I think he tells him to pull down the grating. And then Bruce tells him to dig a hole, which he puts the grating in. He hides it, and he traps him, and he you know, Ethan Hawke ends up, like, dislocating his leg or foot or something.
I think, yeah, his ankle snaps, like, to the right or left or whatever.
Yeah, and I think Robin teaches him how to fight, and he uses some of the same fighting techniques Robin showed him. So, I like that everything they showed him.
Uses the black phone. Mm-hmm. The black phone ends up being what saves him. Right? He takes out the guts of the black phone, fills it up with dirt and stuff. And then, Robin teaches him how to, fight with that. Mm-hmm. And then I thought it was cool. What ultimately ends up happening is Finny grabs the cord because Ethan Hawke still is able to overpower him, so you're right. And then strangles Ethan Hawke until all the kids start to pop up they're talking in his head.
Mm-hmm.
This
is for you. Then, the phone raising Yeah.
And then I forgot... Was the kid's name Bruce? I think the kid's name was Bruce.
Bruce, yeah, the first.
The baseball player.
The baseball player, yeah.
So, Bruce, you hear him say, no, watch out for this kid because his arm is mint. And as soon as he said that, he snaps Ethan Hawke's neck.
Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm.
And then I think the phone rings one more time and he just leaves it.
Possibly.
Am I wrong in that?
I don't remember.
I feel like I kind of remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So here's my takeaway a day later, right?
Okay.
Because I was like, fuck yeah. And then, because right after that, you get another, just a little wrap-up scene at the end where he's walking through the halls and everybody's kind of like, oh, that's him. And then they're like, oh, I thought he'd be way bigger and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
And then his three bullies are kind of looking at him scared and he just kind of smirks and walks away. And he sits down next to that girl.
Mm-hmm.
Who clearly has a thing for him. I'm glad that wasn't a focus, really. It's just kind of there, hey, kids are going to be kids. Mm-hmm. He really likes this popular chick. But this girl, obviously knows what happened, but doesn't pay any full attention. Just kind of sits down and talks to him, and then he's, really happy about it. So I was like, yeah, everything's coming up Finny now. And then I was like, so these bullies are afraid of him because he fucking straight up killed a grown man.
yeah.
Regardless of what that grown man did, which was horrible stuff, he still straight up self-defense murdered a grown man and has got to live with this for the rest of his life. He's probably not okay.
That's a good point. You're right. I get what you're saying. There's I guess they didn't want him. I think that was you're right in that, there probably was in a normal kind of victim situation like this, that are people who are abducted and stuff. They probably will have some trauma and there probably is some trauma. But in that moment, I think the story they were trying to tell was this kid growing into himself, right? Becoming more confident.
Yeah.
And which is why I say this is probably one of the most satisfying endings, because not only does he get help from all of these ghosts, he defeats him, kills him, right? And gets to finds his inner confidence and then has a little whatever with a little girl and stuff like that with his love interest, I guess. And I was like, dude, that's the perfect ending. That's everything I wanted to see. I wanted to see him. I wanted to see the grabber, have some kind of justice done to him. Right. And then this kid not be weak and traumatizing kid. He kind of just I'm brave. I'm tough. This is who I am. I always had it in me. You know what I mean? Because that's what Robin tells him, too. You're tough. You've always been tough. You've never.
Yeah, because.
Yeah,
he's basically able to you always take the hit, but you're never ever out. And I'm like, yeah.
Yeah.
Because if it wasn't for Robin and then later his sister, young little girl is such a badass.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, he's getting his ass kicked because he gets jumped. And then his sister comes out of nowhere and fucking spears, football spears one kid.
Yeah.
And then she chucks a rock and it makes some other kid bleed from his head. So he's just sitting there.
Yeah.
And then she drops down right next to him because she gets hit. And she basically looks at the kid am I right? And the kid's just bleeding from his fucking head. traumatized. And she's all oh, rough day.
Yeah.
and she never gives up on him. She's still out there trying. Mm-hmm. And
yeah.
If it weren't for them, they wouldn't have found the other kids' bodies. And
right.
Yeah. But no, but you're absolutely right. I still walk away from the satisfied because mm-hmm. it's basically again, very Dazed and Confused, a wrap up, like, hey, it's like a coming of age story, but being forced a little bit because he gets kidnapped by Ethan Hawke.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Was that your last thought, or do you want to just go to ratings?
Yeah, we can go to ratings.
Cool, excellent. All right, John, how many sexy spooky bones do you want to give it?
How many sexy spooky bones will you give it? Sexy bones.
Don't do that. Just rate the movie.
I'm gonna give The Black Phone 9.8 sexy spooky bones.
Wow, I had a similar rating, but mine is 9.9. And I was like, when I was thinking of when I left the movie, I was thinking like, what am I gonna rate this? 9.9. I think the only hangups I had was there was like some little bit of, which I didn't really touch upon, was like there's a couple like awkward forced dialogue stuff about like, oh man, you gotta check out the Texas Chainsaw Massacre and shit by Robin. Yeah. And I was like, yeah. A little awkward. That whole like interaction in the bathroom scene was nice, except for like when they were talking about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It looked a little, it was just clunky. It just seemed like kind of clunky to me, like the deliveries and the dialogue. So, and though Jeremy Davis also was like not my like favorite choice in this movie, but I don't know, some of those little things. Other than that, I really had like, those are just nitpicks, by the way. Those are just like deterrents or anything, you know, like things that held against the movie.
My point two, my rating loses 0.2,
yeah,
because there wasn't enough Ethan Hawke face.
Yeah,
it loses 0.2.
I feel like it's Ethan Hawke really wasn't the star of this movie, right? You can even say he's a supporting character to the kids, right?
Yeah.
So, but he's electrifying in this performance, obviously. So, yeah. All right. I give it a 9.9.
Real quick, yes. I gotta add at the very, very end, because it occurred to me halfway through, this is how much we don't give a shit about the family and From. They explain what happened to the other kid, that they were just, you know, taking care of this baby, and they both looked the other way, and the baby fell and died.
Sure.
And then that's when I completely checked out of that story from. Like, that's fucking stupid. Babies are basically made of rubber. That's why you can drop them.
Yeah.
I mean, don't intentionally do it. But like, oh, yeah, it's because we left a bunch of razor blades on the ground and then the baby fell onto the razor blade. I mean, that's what I was waiting for.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I think From suffers from not always the tightest writing or direction sometimes, or acting. So it just felt a little TV-ish. I think that's probably one of the things that it kind of what you're speaking about, I think, is like it's kind of like not always the sharpest. While this is like, no, I think the polar opposite. I think it's like completely like razor blade sharp, you know, and its deliveries at every point and stuff. Yeah. So, cool. All right, guys and gals, non-binary pals, thank you for listening, and as always,
stay spooky. Goodbye. I love you, Ethan Hawke.
Skeleton crew, it's time. The boys say goodbye. We love all of you. We really have to go poo. We'll miss you, but it's time for us to